77-74 North Carolina. 33 seconds remaining. Arkansas with only one timeout left.
What you just heard was a crucial moment during the last minute of the 1993 NCAA East Regional semifinal matchup between the Arkansas Razorbacks and the North Carolina Tar Heels. Razorbacks senior guard Robert Shepherd, who is 6'1", was called for traveling after he picked up his dribble and left his feet in an attempt to pass the ball from behind the three-point line toward the wing. Carolina forward George Lynch, who was 6'8", had just switched off his man and was guarding Shepherd. Lynch gave Shepherd no passing lane, resulting in the turnover. The Razorbacks were down 3 with 26 seconds left in the game and would not score again. Vern Lundquist and Clark Kellogg had the call for CBS Sports.
Carolina's going to advance. Salvadori to Montross. Tar Heels win. But it was a well-played game.
Size and strength inside, ultimately the difference for North Carolina.
That was Kellogg pointing out the size disadvantage between the two teams. That season, Arkansas was referred to as Richardson's Runts because no one on the team was taller than 6'9", and half the roster was 6'5 or shorter. Scotty Thurman, a freshman guard for the Razorbacks at the time, also noticed the height disparity between his team and Carolina.
We felt like we were national contenders my freshman year. We lost to North Carolina, who went on to win the national championship. And due to their size with George Lynch and Kelvin Salvadori and Eric Montross, we just felt like we didn't have the size. And that was the only reason we weren't able to compete with them, because they out-rebounded us so much. And we played them really, really tight. It was a one-possession game at one point, and then they wound up kind of running away from us. But we felt like we could have very well won that game.
Coming home from the New Jersey Meadowlands, the Razorbacks were sorting through all kinds of mixed feelings. They were reflective during the plane ride. They hated losing, but knew they had gone far with a young team. After they arrived back in Fayetteville, the players noticed that the feeling around campus was one of optimism rather than disappointment. And when North Carolina went on to win the national championship 10 days later, that only crystallized the Razorbacks' belief that they were on the doorstep of a championship. They just needed a couple more pieces. Not long after returning to Fayetteville, Thurman, along with freshman forward Corliss Williamson and a couple more teammates, talked to head coach Nolan Richardson about what they needed heading into the following season to make a deeper run in the tournament.
The fact that we made it to the Sweet 16 was a very successful season for us. And after that game, after losing to North Carolina, we just felt like, hey, we had a seven-footer or two, and we'd have an opportunity to compete for a national championship.
So that offseason, Darnell Robinson from Oakland, California, and Lee Wilson of Waco, Texas, were signed. Both were listed at 6'11". They would make a difference. During the early 1990s, UNLV, Duke, and North Carolina were the big dogs of college basketball. There were other programs vying for the same status, UCLA, Michigan, and others. But the Razorbacks headed into the 93-94 season believing that it was their turn.
Fast forward to that summer when you get the two new freshmen in and a couple other transfers in, and you get to practice and you see this team, you know, evolving and improving, and you can see that, you know, hey, we do have a chance to have something special here. So I think that offseason we really started to feel like we were moving in the right direction.
It was more than merely talent that gave the local and national sports media reason to think the 93-94 Razorbacks were en route to excellence. It probably wasn't even Nolan Richardson's most talented team. That distinction probably belonged to the teams from the early 90s that included Todd Day, Lee Mayberry, and Oliver Miller, who all were drafted in the first round of the NBA in 1992. But the 93-94 team was one with no glaring weaknesses. Complacency was a foreign word. They were focused, ambitious, and unselfish. Wally Hall, the sports editor for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, counts college basketball season as one of his favorite sports seasons of the year, and he counts that team as one of his all-time favorites to cover.
But that team, it had self-starters. All those players wanted to be better. All of them wanted to win, and they would do whatever it took.
It was a team with a lot of important pieces, but the heart, soul, and spine of that team were Corliss Williamson, Scotty Thurman, and Corey Beck. Corliss Williamson grew up in Russellville, Arkansas. He got started in competitive sports early and played Little League Baseball in the summer. He set his sights on basketball when he started playing through an Amateur Athletic Union League, or AAU League. Playing inside in an air-conditioned gymnasium versus being on a baseball diamond in the dead of the Arkansas summer was an easy choice for him. A growth spurt also helped. As he started playing basketball more, Williamson started watching more college games on television. His mother was a fan of the UCLA Bruins. He became a fan of the Georgetown Hoyas. Then came the arrival of Nolan Richardson to the university about 115 miles to the northwest of Russellville. Williamson showed up at basketball camps in Fayetteville. That's where he first met his future coach. Before long, Nolan Richardson became a household name in Arkansas, just as Corliss Williamson was becoming a household name as a high school basketball standout. A gentleman off the court, Williamson was intimidating and assertive on the court. That's how he got the nickname Big Nasty. His college coach still calls him that when he talks about him.
Well, you take Big Nasty, was a homebred kid, and his parents, everybody, they raised it back from the word go. And he had such a phenomenal high school career. And he was a big, strong, Corliss was a perfect fit for my team because he could run. He was able to adjust so easy, so quick. And he found himself that he's a pretty good player besides being around the post.
That was a key component to his game. Corliss Williamson liked to run the floor. As for his half-court game, he could play inside and still out-rebound taller players because he was so physical. He was often too quick for most big men to guard and too strong for small forwards to handle. His athleticism wasn't just restricted to his size and quickness. He was an endurance athlete, too, which was unusual for big guys. That's why 40 minutes of hell for Williamson wasn't all that daunting. The earliest practices for any player being indoctrinated in the Richardson way of basketball must have felt a lot like boot camp, but not necessarily for Corliss Williamson. He acknowledged that those practices were tough, but that wasn't the first adjective he used to describe them.
It was fun, but in the same sense, you know, it was pretty tough. But the one thing about Coach Richardson is he does a great job of getting his team in shape. So our preseason workouts, that's what prepared us to get ready for practice. All the running that we did prepared us for that first day. We hit the court and he brought out the medicine ball and the ball is filled with water. And, you know, we were kind of prepared for it, but it was still nothing like actually going through it once you hit that floor, and the intensity was just off the chain.
Wally Hall remembers watching those players endure some of those physical training sessions.
And Arkansas was in such physical shape. I mean, they were always in great shape. I don't know if you've ever seen Cleveland Hill. It's a street there, a couple of blocks off campus. I don't think I could walk up it, and they used to run up it. My car sputters going up it. It's so steep, and he had them running up and down it.
As for Corliss Williamson's involvement in the offense, Wally noticed during Williamson's sophomore year, the 93-94 season, that he touched the ball almost every time down the floor.
That year, Nolan started going inside out. Corliss touched the ball on almost every possession. He didn't shoot every time. He knew when he had a good shot or didn't. He was a really, he had a lot of basketball IQ and physical talent, and they would go inside out. And teams weren't really expecting that because Arkansas was always kind of a fast break, up-tempo, run the ball down your throat, get you tired, wear you out. But they would go right into a half-court offense and work inside out, and Corliss was just a bull down low.
Corliss Williamson was a star, but he was far from the only one who made impacts on games. That team had a lot of guys like that. If Williamson was the one captaining the ship, Scotty Thurman was his first mate. Scotty Thurman was a heavily recruited hoops player in Louisiana. By his senior year, he was getting interest from schools across the country. Thurman had the advantage of having someone in his corner who had walked a similar path. His father, the elder Thurman, knew what it meant to be recruited and understood the gravity of choosing the right university to sign with. So he made sure to instruct his son not to take any part of it lightly.
My experience of having played collegiately, and he was supposed to be one of the first African-Americans to integrate the University of Houston with Elvin Hayes, but he decided to stay home and go to an HBCU, Grambling State, where he played with Willis Reed, so he kind of knew the lay of the land.
On his own, Scotty Thurman had narrowed down his list of potential colleges to 10. He soon found out that was not narrow enough. His dad came home after working offshore, learned of his son's list, and told him to cut it in half. He did. His top five choices were Arkansas, Oklahoma, Texas, Pittsburgh, and Stanford. He visited Fayetteville and a couple other places, but canceled his final two trips because in his heart of hearts, he knew where he wanted to be. Thurman was a Louisiana kid with no affiliation to Arkansas, but there were still a few reasons, big reasons, for him wanting to come to the Razorbacks.
Back in those days, there were not a lot of African-American head coaches, and so that stood out to me. I never had the opportunity to play for a black coach, and so that was intriguing. Style of play was intriguing. Proximity to Russell, Louisiana was intriguing because I wanted my parents and my family to be able to have the opportunity to see me play. So I thought that was a big deal. Even though Arkansas did have a lot of nationally televised games, I still wanted to, have the ability to drive there.
Arkansas had it all. A coach he wanted to play for, a playing style he loved, a national profile, and proximity to home. There was another major reason Thurman wanted to come to Fayetteville. He had competed against Corliss Williamson at the AAU level. He much preferred the thought of joining him over facing him. Williamson's team defeated Thurman's team in the third-place consolation game at the AAU tournament when they were seniors. Thurman was leaning Arkansas and knew that Williamson had Arkansas on his short list.
He was kind of thinking about going to Arkansas, wasn't sure. I think there was like Indiana and Georgetown on his mind.
Thurman said he and Williamson cultivated a friendship while they were both considering Arkansas, and both of them relished the thought of going to a school where they knew someone. They could rely on each other and trust each other. Arkansas was the right fit for both of them. No one was happier about Thurman coming to Fayetteville than Nolan Richardson.
Scotty Thurman is the most knowledgeable guy of the game. See the game, play the game, and takes advantage of the game. He didn't have the quickness that most of the guys had, but he had the intelligence that knew how to move and split the court up to help out on the defensive end. He had great hands. You got to have a guy that has some kind of a sense of being able to anticipate. I thought Scotty was the most anticipating player probably out there of the coach. And he had one of the nicest jump shots that you could ever want.
Scotty Thurman, who was now a high school basketball coach in Little Rock, was very much like a coach on the floor when he played for Richardson. Those who covered the team could see that.
Scotty saw the whole core. He was like one step ahead of everybody else. He knew what was going to happen, when it was going to happen, and how it was going to happen. He just had instincts that were incredible.
The season before Williamson and Thurman arrived, there was a freshman point guard who had already begun his college playing career at South Plains Junior College near Lubbock, Texas. Corey Beck was a tough-as-nails kid from Memphis, that city to the east that Nolan Richardson loved to recruit from. Richardson had an idiom he always used when it came to playing defense: cut the head off the snake. That meant you bottled up, rattled, or shut down the opposing team's point guard. That meant when it came time to recruit his own point guard, Richardson had to have one who could withstand the kind of defense that he was accustomed to unleashing on other teams. To play point guard for Nolan Richardson, you'd better know how to handle a defense, let loose your own form of high-pressure defense, and be a skilled passer and scorer. And above all else, be very tough. Richardson never had to worry about that when it came to Corey Beck.
Corey Beck was the toughest kid, maybe. Tough, tough kid. From Memphis area, he played the point. Sometimes he could play the two, he could play the three. That's who Beck was. He was the man. He was the vocal leader.
Wally loved to watch Corey Beck play.
Pound for pound, one of the toughest players I think I've ever seen. If you needed a steal, he would get a steal. If you needed a rebound, he was getting a rebound. If you needed a three-point shot, not his specialty, but he'd get you one. Whatever he had to do to get the win, he was willing to do. He sacrificed everything. He was all out.
Arkansas had many great players. Al Dillard was a three-point specialist. Clint McDaniel was a guard who handled the ball extremely well, especially on fast breaks. Dwight Stewart was a 6'9 center who was comfortable shooting from long range. Roger Crawford was a senior on that squad and provided even more depth in the backcourt. And there was Davor Rimac, a 6'7 guard from Croatia who could pass and shoot. Adding those two freshman big men I mentioned earlier, Darnell Robinson and Lee Wilson, the Razorbacks' roster was complete. Alexander Wolf of Sports Illustrated could see from afar how well assembled the 93-94 team was and how well suited it was for a title run compared to the earlier teams Richardson had coached.
Look what Nolan brings in. He brings in real size, Lee Wilson and Darnell Robinson. Having those two guys allows Corliss Williamson to really be more free in the half court. And a coach would be a fool to have three guys like that and not retool, at least to the extent that you can exercise that advantage that you have in your size and strength and in the half court. And you still have your guard play. You have a guy like Dwight Stewart, who's a big guy, but can go out and make threes. It was a much, much more balanced team than what he had had in the previous 4, 5, 6 years. It's almost like those earlier teams were Nolan trying to prove a point, and the 93-94 team was Nolan trying to win a national championship.
Heading into November of 1993, Arkansas was a preseason number 2 in the AP poll, so the team was generating some attention. How seriously the media were taking them was up for debate. The coach and players certainly did not feel as though they were getting the respect they deserved. But in terms of polling and projections, the media's impressions were very positive.
They had made the Sweet 16 the year before. We're getting better, and my expectations were that they were a Final Four team. Now, could they win it all? I didn't know.
The number one ranked team in the preseason that year was the North Carolina Tar Heels, the team that knocked off Arkansas the year before in the NCAA tournament. That roster was mostly intact. As usual, the national media were giving the most love in the preseason to teams east of the Mississippi River. That included not only Carolina and Duke, but also SEC rival Kentucky, as well as Michigan, Louisville, and others. But the Arkansas-based sports media were writing and airing stories daily about how confident and energetic the Razorbacks looked. They may have also been fueled by a lot of anger, rightly or wrongly. Wally Hall said that Richardson and his players always felt slighted. Players often take on the us-against-the-world mentality, and that can get tiresome to media folks who are always looking for fresher angles for stories. But that was the group's credo. It was tried and true, and it clearly worked for them.
I think 8 weeks out of that season, they were number one. And you know what the team mantra was? We don't get any respect. That's what they would tell each other. We don't get any respect. And they were right number one, but they believed it.
The other schools that spent any time at number one during the season, besides UNC, were Duke, Kansas, Kentucky, and UCLA. Arkansas spent more weeks atop the AP poll during the regular season than all of those other schools combined. If you were facing Arkansas that season, chances are you respected them. To prepare for the Razorbacks, opposing coaches would take their bench players and try to have them mimic the Razorbacks' style of defense during practice. Only in some cases, those opposing coaches would have 7 of their bench players play defense against the starting 5. They did so because that was the most effective way to prepare them for what they would be facing, a high-intensity style of defense that caused confusion and turnovers, lots and lots of turnovers. Arkansas knew how to trap you, take away your passing lanes, and beat their opponents to the ball on long court passes. So opposing coaches would try to be as creative as they could to get their teams ready for what was coming. Nolan Richardson wanted his teams to play various styles of defense during the course of the game. They needed to be ready to switch up at a moment's notice.
Our style of play, Tony, was totally different than any style of play that we had played against. And I think that's one of the reasons we were fortunate. Nobody played like we did. We did things that basketball coaches frowned on. You know, we trapped you in the middle of the floor. That group could play you any kind of way. They could play you slow. They could run the break on you. They could press you. They could zone you. You know, and I took pride in the fact all my players knew how different we can change defenses.
It's sometimes hard to get players to get excited to play defense. Corliss Williamson said that he and his teammates were always up for it.
Just very versatile defensively. I mean, we had a great matchup zone. We could play man-to-man. We could pick you up in a zone press or a man-to-man press. So the fact that we were able to change defenses kept teams off balance. But the one thing Coach Richardson always preached was, you know, we're not going to let you do what you like to do. So we're not going to let their team be comfortable. We're not going to let them run offense and play the way they want to play. We're going to make them play our style of basketball. That was the beauty of it. Our defense set the tone.
There was something else about the 93-94 season that was special. The university was unveiling a new and improved arena. Barnhill was too small for Richardson's Razorbacks, so Bud Walton Arena was built. Wally said the one who needs to be credited the most with bringing in more fans by the thousands is Nolan Richardson.
When he started getting his own players in, he became enormously popular with the fans. I mean, they built Bud Walton Arena for him because they needed a bigger palace for his brand of basketball.
The first team the Razorbacks played that season was Murray State. Arkansas won by 16. The Murray State game was more of a soft opening for the new arena. The grand opening was three nights later, on December 2nd, 1993. The team they faced that night? The Missouri Tigers. That game is remembered fondly by Kevin Trainer, who was a senior at the University of Arkansas at the time and served as an assistant to the communications director. Today, he is the chief public relations officer for the university's athletics program.
I think the first time people really thought this team had a chance to do something special was probably the night that he dedicated Bud Walton Arena against Missouri.
In the years prior to 1993, Missouri had actually come to Barnhill and beaten the Razorbacks. Conversely, the Razorbacks had beaten the Tigers on their floor. In fact, the last four times the teams played each other, the road team won. Much like Arkansas, Missouri was a team that had its own high expectations. In just about every game that season, the Tigers met those expectations, just not on this night. Arkansas won 120-68. The game was televised on ESPN. The play-by-play announcer, Tim Brando, could barely be heard over the screaming crowd as the final seconds ticked down.
In a big way.
Bob Holt covered that game for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
I knew that if they could destroy Missouri like that, then they were going to be pretty tough.
Another one who still has vivid memories of that game is Corliss Williamson.
We were just on fire that night. The more I think about the game, I'm just thinking about all the shots that we were hitting and making. And, you know, you just look at Missouri, I know they have their group called the Antlers. That's their fan base. But they did look like deer in headlights when that game started. So, it was just an amazing night.
The Antlers, as they call themselves, could be seen at the game, but they could not be heard. They had no reason to cheer, and they had no chance, even if they had brought cowbells and vuvuzelas with them, of making any kind of noise that could not be drowned out by the thousands of screaming Razorback fans.
I didn't think they were going to steamroll Missouri, certainly not by 52 points. I thought it would be a real good game because we knew Arkansas was good. We knew Arkansas was at home, certainly expecting Arkansas to win. But Missouri had come into Barnhill and beaten Arkansas. And Arkansas had gone into the Hearn Center in Columbia, where Missouri played back then, and beat Missouri. It had been a really good rivalry and very competitive. And so I thought Arkansas would win. But to beat Missouri like that, that was very eye-opening.
That lopsided win was even more impressive than most people realized at the time. Missouri went on to have a magnificent season. They went undefeated in the Big Eight. They swept Kansas, which for a single week had been a number one ranked team that year. Missouri also swept Oklahoma State and Nebraska during the regular season, and both of those teams made the NCAA tournament. Fast forward to March 1994, Missouri wound up with a 25-3 overall record and earned the number one seed in the West region in the NCAA tournament. Missouri made it all the way to the regional final that year, but lost before they could face Arkansas in the Final Four. Norm Stewart was the head coach of Missouri, and he must have had conflicting feelings about not facing Arkansas a second time that season. He indicated as much when he spoke to Bob Holt at the Final Four.
I asked them kind of to compare the teams, and he said that was hard to do. I said, because you played, Arkansas so early in the season, And he goes, no, because the night we played Arkansas, the game was in Fayetteville, but our team was in Little Rock. You know, that was kind of Norm's sense of humor.
After the Missouri game, the next two home games for Arkansas came against Northwestern State and Delaware State, in which the Razorbacks scored a combined 234 points. In the Northwestern State game, Arkansas was actually down by 9 in the first half. Northwestern State's coach said after the game that Arkansas reminded him of an NBA team and that no such deficit should ever concern them because they were capable of scoring points in bunches. In the Delaware State game, junior guard Al Dillard went off. He broke a school and conference record by hitting 12 three-pointers in a single game. He led all scorers with 39 points. Sandwiched between those two home games was a road game of sorts against Memphis. Arkansas won that one by the score of 96-78. The first major road test for the Razorbacks, however, came 2 days before Christmas against Nolan Richardson's former team, Tulsa. Coached by Tubby Smith, Tulsa was the best of the Missouri Valley Conference and had a pair of great shooters. Arkansas needed overtime to beat them. By then, the Razorbacks had been atop the AP standings for a few weeks. That's where they would remain until January 8th in Tuscaloosa. The Alabama Crimson Tide handed Arkansas its first loss of the season by squeaking out a 66-64 win. That loss at Alabama dropped the Razorbacks to number 4 in the country. They beat LSU and Auburn the next two games, only to slip up at Mississippi State. They lost that road game, 72-71. Arkansas would not lose another regular season game. They would win the next 12 consecutive games. That streak included a 99-87 win against the Florida Gators, which were ranked 20th in the country at the time.
Yeah, I remember Florida came into Walden Arena, and they, like you said, they had a really good, tough team, and Lon Kruger was the coach, and they were ranked 20th. Arkansas beat them, but I remember being a real competitive game, being very impressed with Florida. Yeah, Florida was really good. I mean, the SEC was good. I mean, just like the SEC is good now, it was good back then, too.
That Florida win was the one that put Arkansas back at the top of the national rankings. Also during the winning streak, Arkansas would avenge both of the losses they had suffered. When it was Alabama's turn to come to Fayetteville, the Razorbacks put up 102 points against them and outscored the Tide by 21 points. In their second game against Mississippi State, the last game of the regular season, the Hogs won 80-62. Corliss Williamson led the way with 27 points and grabbed 9 rebounds. No story about SEC basketball is complete without mentioning Kentucky, and the 90s decade was a momentous time for that program. Entering conference play in 1991, Razorbacks fans knew that the Wildcats were the top of the SEC food chain, usually. The start of Arkansas's year-over-year rivalry with Kentucky had interesting timing. It came during Kentucky's long recovery from NCAA-imposed sanctions. The one in charge when the NCAA investigators came knocking was none other than former Arkansas Razorbacks coach Eddie Sutton. He was jettisoned, as was his staff and his boss, athletic director Cliff Hagan. Paying players was against the rules, full stop. And college programs caught in the act of doing so ran the risk of receiving what was coined the death penalty, a complete shuttering of a program for a whole season, and limits on scholarships thereafter, among other restrictions. Kentucky nearly received such a penalty, but after a full-scale admission of guilt on the part of the university, the NCAA settled on a compromise. It placed Kentucky on 3 years probation, which included a ban on postseason play for the first 2 years of that probationary period. The school could not play any televised games during that first year, and there were harsh restrictions on scholarships. Alexander Wolf was with Sports Illustrated when his magazine and other media covered the Kentucky basketball scandal. The investigation into Kentucky was commenced after one of Sutton's assistants sent money to the father of a blue-chip player.
Yeah, an Emory envelope package came open in shipping somewhere in Southern California. The package had originated in the Kentucky basketball office and was bound for the family of a recruit, Chris Mills, in Southern California.
More indiscretions were uncovered during the investigation, including evidence of academic fraud. The fact that all of it happened while Sutton was in Lexington, the place he famously said he'd crawl to from Fayetteville for the opportunity to coach the Wildcats, felt more than a little tragic. David Alphen remembers the chatter in Arkansas during the Sutton fallout in Kentucky.
I remember at the coffee shops to sit there and people had asked me about it. And I said, I'm not saying anything negative about Eddie Sutton because he's the one that put this program on the map. You know, there were problems and all that, but he's the one that put this program on the map. And I'll always be thankful to it.
Sutton would move on. Meanwhile, Kentucky needed to move on somehow.
The upshot is after a debilitating few years where recruiting goes into the tank and performance is affected by all the distractions, Eddie Sutton is essentially driven out. And Kentucky goes on this probation and they have to bring in Rick Pitino to kind of dig out from this hole that they're in.
Rick Pitino had previously coached the New York Knicks of the NBA. And before that, took the Providence Friars to the Final Four. In 1992, he took a band of misfits, the leftover players from the Sutton regime, the ones who did not transfer out, and came just one miracle shot away from upsetting defending champion Duke in the East Regional Final in the Spectrum in Philadelphia, widely considered one of the most exciting basketball games ever played.
There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up.
So Kentucky was completing its long climb back into relevance. But it did not take as long as anticipated, thanks in large part to the recruiting and coaching efforts of Pitino. But something was different about the SEC when Kentucky reemerged from its sanction-imposed stupor. Wildcat fans noticed that it was a little more crowded at the top. The 91-92 team, led by Todd Day, Lee Mayberry, and Oliver Miller, went into Rupp Arena in Lexington and defeated the Wildcats, the same Wildcats team that nearly upended Duke. But also during that season, on the first day of the SEC tournament, something strange happened. Wally Hall was there to witness it.
Kentucky owned the SEC. I mean, they just owned it. And that first year, Arkansas won the SEC. They went 13-3 in league play, and they won it. And the SEC tournament that year was in Birmingham. It was the day before they played, but they came into the game to watch some basketball, the team did. And all of a sudden, it's mostly blue, the stands are. And Kentucky wasn't playing until the next day either, but their fans go to the games. And Arkansas walks in, and all of a sudden, this hog call starts. And the people are looking around like, what in the world? And then they watched Arkansas. They already lost Arkansas, but that was their first taste that Arkansas had fans and were going to follow them.
Kevin Trainer remembers how much of an impression that left, not only on the Kentucky fans, but on the SEC commissioner.
Commissioner Roy Kramer of the SEC still mentions that as one of the times that he first realized how much the league would change with the addition of Arkansas, that to really change the SEC in college basketball forever. And it's one of the defining moments that I think Razorback fans and Razorback basketball delivered.
Upsets happen. Conference expansions happen. But there was no way Arkansas was going to show up Kentucky again 2 years later, not in Rupp Arena. Surely Arkansas was a juggernaut that season, but so was Kentucky, which, like Arkansas, had earned a number one ranking that season. For a few moments, the day before the game, Mother Nature put a major scare into the Razorbacks. Corliss Williamson and Scotty Thurman, without any probing from me, started describing the plane ride into Lexington that February day in 1994.
Probably one of the scariest moments of my life was we were flying into Kentucky. It was storming really bad, and back then we were taking those little private planes, propeller plane. You know, the plane was being tossed around through the air, and, you know, we're all holding on, you know, nervous for our lives.
It's raining extremely hard, and myself, Corliss Williamson, Alex Dillard, Darnell Robinson, Dwight Stewart, Corey Beck, we're all on the same plane. And as we're landing, we see pilots having a hard time locating the runway.
All of a sudden, the pilot just yells out, "Hey, we're going in." And so we kind of like look around and say, like, what?
Lo and behold, the pilot just throws the book he had in his lap and whatever else. He said, "I'm going in." And we were all like, going in? What do you mean you're going in?
During the descent, Scotty Thurman noticed an assistant coach looking nervous, Al Dillard looking like he was about to vomit, and Darnell Robinson finding it all hilarious. Thurman, along with Corliss Williamson and Corey Beck, kept their head and eyes straight, white-knuckling it all the way until the wheels touched the asphalt. The team took 4 planes to the game. The other 3 planes, including the one carrying the head coach, flew through the same weather pattern and dealt with the same low visibility and turbulence. But they all made it. By the next day, the Razorbacks finally felt at ease enough to play a game. Arkansas was ranked 3rd in the country heading into that matchup with Kentucky. The Wildcats were ranked 4th. It was a showcase game for the SEC. Arkansas won by the score of 90-82. The memories of the game itself are still vivid for Thurman, especially the memories after the final buzzer. The inside of the arena was almost all Kentucky blue. Almost.
We had a former player's parent who was way up at the top of Rupp Arena. He had on all red and a mix of sea of blue. And he just started screaming, "How about them Hogs?" And I mean, the arena went crazy. They started booing him. But it was the best feeling in the world for us.
Thurman said the celebration they had in the locker room after that game was some of the most fun he ever had while at Arkansas. Five weeks later was the SEC tournament. It was held in Memphis, the very place that Nolan Richardson referred to as a base of recruiting for him. It was the home of Corey Beck and Dwight Stewart, as well as Elmer Martin, who also was a player on that team. 1/5 of the roster was literally coming home, and Memphis was a very familiar place for the rest of the team. Razorbacks fans would not have to travel far to attend the game, so playing at the Pyramid Arena in Memphis was going to feel a lot like a home game. The Razorbacks were about to find out that it really is easier to be distracted at home.
Hog Wild, the Razorbacks championship season, is a podcast by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. The show is written and hosted by Tony Holt and produced by Kyle McDaniel.